Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
We live in a world that is exactly the size of our understanding. If you find the walls closing in on you, if you feel things are unfair, if you don't like the way people treat you, if you're uncomfortable in any condition whatsoever, it's because your life is a reflection of this understanding that you have of what life is and what it's for. And it's the most difficult thing that you can convey to a person, that they live in a world the size of their understanding and that their experience moment to moment is a direct reflection of that understanding. That's a difficult thing to make a person understand, because our mind and its sensory laden apparatus that meets life as it does it, it's convinced that our experience is a result of our relationships with others. And as a result of that perception, our minds and hearts, everything about us is dedicated to getting others to accommodate what we believe they ought to be. Our life is filled with a constant struggle to control conditions around us, because without having what we think is that control, and then we suffer. And if it's not because of you that I'm in pain, if it's not because of that that I feel lost and lonely, if it's not for this, then what would I do with my life? What would I do with my moments if I actually suspected that the taste of now was not because of what was being poured into me, but because of the way in which I take it, that my taste buds, if you will. And we don't want to be responsible for how we taste things. We want to control the taste before it gets to us. And this is a terrible way to live. It can't work, and our lives are nothing but one series of evidences after another of the truth of that. But there's more than that in the idea that we live in a world the size of our understanding, because just as we can look and see, and I hope you can look and say, okay, let's see. He said, I live in a world the size of my understanding. What does that mean? Okay, I got mad today at someone. I got frightened when I heard something was may or may not happen. And my view was that the pain that I was in, that kind of horrible sense of suddenly being a captive of something or having to control something, my view is that it's because of what happened. And so a person lives in a world that is exactly the size of what they're capable of understanding in the moment. And if their understanding is small, they live in a small world. And they suffer. They suffer. You suffer from living in a small world. Now, the thing is, the problem with suffering from living in a small world is that that suffering falls on the small part of you. And that same small part that keeps life so tight, so controlled, so don't want anything that's not part of whatever it is that I've thought through and planned, the same nature that's operating like that, when suddenly life shows it, look, you know, you can plan, man, but big deal. Nothing is going to go the way you want it to go. And even when it does, at some point it must change, and you're going to suddenly find yourself in this little box. And then that same nature that feels itself a captive of something does the same thing that it's always done before, which is it turns to itself and it describes to itself from its understanding what it needs to do in order to be free. And so you have a human being who, for their whole life, experiences a direct relationship with their own understanding, and then not recognizing that their understanding, and this is key, is presently limited. That then that same person turns to the same exact scale, the same level of understanding, to help them somehow or other change themselves. Now, I'm going to tell you a story. And the point of the story will be evident once you hear it, but I want to set up the story before I tell it to you. How many of you know that you have a tendency to make little things into big things? You know, a person, and this is the God's honest truth, a person can spend 50 years fighting with, suffering over something that in its essence was actually nothing, and having turned it from that little thing into a big thing, spends their days in a daze fighting to figure out how to free themselves from something that has no existence apart from their level of understanding and what it's permitted. That's all. Now, the flip side of that, because I have to get to it because it's so beautiful, is that we have in us a spirit. We have in us a nature whose very fabric is infinite relationship with whatever it comes into relationship with, which means that we have in us the capacity to live, instead of a little life directed by the way in which a little mind responds to little things and blows them up, we have something in us that's capable of recognizing at all times that there is no end to what is possible for an individual to be in relationship with, what is possible for a person to understand. And I must clarify this word understanding for a moment, because when we think of understanding, we think about understanding. And I'm not talking about the kind of understanding that comes from thought. Thought understands nothing. Thought understands nothing. Understanding, true understanding, is born out of a human being being in direct relationship with that which his or her attention is upon. That's understanding, because in that moment, something of that which the attention is on unites with that which is in the individual and has put attention upon it, and in that awareness there is a marriage. So unless there's marriage, there's no understanding. Unless there's unity between the person who sees something and what they see, unless something takes place in which a marriage takes place, there's no understanding. And no understanding, real understanding, exists apart from that. And when you understand that idea, if you can, then you can also see that accordingly, as a man or a woman works at recognizing first the sheer limitation and living from a mind that only knows how to approach things from thoughts about it, to a mind that begins to be present to itself, wherever it is and whatever it's doing, then suddenly a person realizes, you know, I don't have a problem. I have no problems. There was once a rambling reporter, and I'm going to go through this story quickly because I have a second story that I need to tell. And the rambling reporter, for those of you who are familiar with the life of the rambling reporter, goes from town to town to town looking for various spiritual phenomena by which he can educate himself and gain understanding through direct relationships, seeing things as they take place and learning the principles that he sees as they're acted out when it comes to punishing states and small confining quarters. And so he happens to pull into a small place when he sees a man walking down the street. There's always a man walking down the street. And as the man's walking down the street, appears from out of the ground first, it looks like a little black balloon. Sort of, you know, like just a little black balloon. But as the balloon begins to rise up, this man begins to have some kind of dialogue with it. And as he talks to it, this thing starts to take shape. And it starts to grow arms, and it grows a very ugly face. It expands almost to the size of a building. Multiple eyes, green fingers, horrible thing. Finally, the man's talking and talking to it, and the thing just grabs him, sucks him inside. They disappear like just almost like every other instance like that happened. Well, here's a fascinating story again. What is this little black thing coming out that takes on a shape? Because within 5 minutes, he saw a woman walking into a store. And right there at the outset of the store, the same thing, right out of the cement. But this time, the little black bubble, as it came up, took on a completely different shape, a completely different form. Didn't look anything like the other form that the man had been engaged with. So he couldn't understand for the life of him what kind of this multiple evil spirits, what's going on.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Like I said, I have to get to the end of the story. He sees this a number of times, and finally, when he's just about run out of what he can figure this is all towards, he sees a nice gentleman in a nice suit, not too fancy, he's walking down the street. And as he's walking down the street, appears on the other side of the street, this little black bubble, and up it comes. And it starts to get bigger and bigger and larger, and it approaches him. And as it's getting bigger, he's looking to see what the man, like the other people, is going to do, because everybody else, you know, had a dialogue with it, talked to it, yelled at it, tried to run away. You know how the story goes, and everybody always winds up being sucked into this thing. Well, this man, as this thing is approaching, he doesn't say a thing. He just stands there and looks at it, and the thing gets closer, it gets closer, and the rambling reporter wants to know what's going to happen. This thing is just, the guy's not going to fight for himself at all. But as soon as the thing gets right up next to him, and it's taken on a form, a rather hideous form, all of a sudden, the man in the nice suit looks at this thing, and he says some words. The reporter sees him go. If you're listening to this tape, you can't see me moving my lips. But he sees the fellow say something. And as soon as the fellow says what he says, this horrific creature, kind of, have you ever seen the reverse photography? You know, it's just the ugly face turns into the little hands come in, little arms disappear. The whole thing just sucks back down the little black dot and disappears back into the ground. Well, the reporter obviously wants to know what kind of magic this is. What does this man understand spiritually that everyone else in this town didn't? And he goes over and he says to the fellow, I know that I just saw something phenomenal. And I myself, he said, I have to tell you, while they don't take the shape of the things that I've seen here, I myself have been accosted by things that start really small and then get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until finally, not unlike what I saw, I'm absorbed. I'm carried away. By the way, let's break into the story. Do any of you ever start with something small? You know, somebody just doesn't do quite what you want them to do. Somebody says something or questions you in a small way. Something isn't quite right. Does that ever turn from a little tiny black bubble coming out of the ground and starts to get bigger and uglier until finally you're fighting with it and then you disappear, huh? Yes? So he says, I'm dying to know what it was that you said to this thing. And the man said, well, it's really, I'm glad to tell you. He said, what I said and what I say each time it happens, because this is a phenomena that takes place where I live, I simply said, you're nothing but a little thing, and I have no interest in spending any more time with you. And the reporter said, you said what? You're nothing but a little thing, and I have no interest in spending any more time with you. And the fellow said, that's it? He said, yeah. He said, oh, fantastic. Now I know. Now, how many of you are ahead of the story? Reporter thinking, man, I've got this thing nailed. Simply, he's repeating himself, you're nothing but a little thing, you're nothing but a little thing, and I have no interest in speaking with you anymore. And he wants to get it right because he figures the something about the words and all that must be the case. So no more does he get to his car, getting ready to leave the town, than up in front of, right in front of his car, a little black bubble starts to appear, thing starts to swell, and the man notices, and this is pretty important, he notices that this thing that's swelling up in front of him, the reason it looks like it does, and it must have looked this way to everybody, is because he recognizes something pretty darn familiar in this thing. So he surmised that everybody who faced these things had to be looking at something for which they were part and parcel responsible for the shape and the size of it. And he's looking at it, and he becomes pretty fascinated with it, which is what happens, by the way. But as soon as it reaches this horrific state and he starts to feel afraid to get ready to fight, he remembers and he looks at it and says, yeah, you're nothing but a little thing and I have no interest in spending any time with you. And the thing just swallows him. And as with all stories where dark states swallow up human beings in one form or another, it popped him out at the end of town someplace. And he's lying there in the dirt. And he's thinking to himself, what went wrong? I'm going to leave the story there. Have you ever found yourself swallowed up by something like that? The reason I'm asking is because until a person starts to understand how this takes place, meaning, what is it exactly that's transpiring when this little nothing of a thought, this sudden flash of a fire inside of the mind, when that first ignition takes place and then the thing grows, a person has to understand that, and he or she must also understand what the elderly man in the story did that the reporter didn't. Because until we have new understanding and then act on that new understanding, nothing can take place except for this continual struggle with frightening thoughts and feelings that pass themselves off slowly as something that seems to be threatening, worrying us, until finally the thing is so large that it consumes us. And by the way, ruins everything. Ruins everything. So I'm going to submit something to you, an idea. And then we're going to examine the idea to see whether or not it's possible that we can learn something that will allow us not just to have the words when it comes to those moments where suddenly something starts to compromise us, but actually have living in us that understanding itself. The problem, the big problem, before I submit this question to you, the big problem is that human beings, you believe that your understanding is the same thing as the understanding that's capable of dispelling a dark state. Your understanding is not capable of dispelling anything. It may buy you time, which, by the way, is a necessary stage on the spiritual path. It is a necessary stage that one gradually recognizes that his or her ideas of a power and the sensations they draw from that, even when it's rooted in principle, is not the same thing as the living spirit itself. It's not the same thing as the power itself, the light itself. So it's necessary that an individual goes through these stages. But what we're after, if we're interested in this at all, is what is it exactly that's going on? What is the understanding that's missing? And the understanding that's missing, I'm going to say it very simply first, is, and I'll say it in two different ways. You don't know what is yours, and you don't know what is not yours. That's the first way I'll say it. You don't know what is yours, and you don't know what is not yours. That's the first thing. And now I'll say it to you in a different thing way. You don't know how to distinguish what we'll call little things from big things. You don't know how to distinguish them. Now, we're going to look at the nature of thought for a moment. And I beg you to do what you have to do to listen and stay awake. Because the first thing I want to tell you is that no thought is a big thing. None. How many of you are pretty sure that you have a big thing for a thought? Well, you know, when you're hammering on something, that thought, man, that's a big thing. Do you know what he said? Did you see what she did? My God, this world, this terrible world. And you fill in the blank, and here is a big thought. It's a big thing, huh? Big thought, big thing. Yes or no? No. No thought is a big thing. No thought is a big thing. We're going to study now, for the first time, perhaps in the history of the study of thought, we're going to study the phylum of thought. Now, how many of you know what a phylum is? Me neither. A phylum is a way in which things are classified according to their quality and character. So first I'm going to tell you something. No thought is a big thing. A thought is either a no thing or it's a show thing. A thought is either a no thing or it's a show thing. Now, what does it mean that a thought is a no thing? Now, this is hard for us to grasp because we're pretty darn sure that when we think about someone, that the thought we have about someone or what they did is the same thing as the someone and what they did. But the thought is a no thing. The thought is not the person. The thought is an image that the mind has crafted of the event, filled with the content of the experience, and then it looks at this no thing, and what does the thought make of the no thing? It makes of it a something, another category. So we've got no things that are made into some things, and then we have the natural category of thought, which is a show thing. Now, what is a show thing when it comes to a thought? A thought, a show thing, is a tool of the mind by which it expresses, it shows, I'm using thoughts as a show thing while I'm talking to you. I'm showing you things. I'm showing you ideas. A thought is intended to be a show thing. When you look at your mind, in your mind, and you see a picture of a river, The picture of the river isn't the river, it's a show thing, isn't it? So that when you think about a river and you see the river, you're looking at thought that is a show thing at the moment. Now, here's an interesting distinction. Take a nice deep breath. Show things in and of themselves don't have problems. For instance, if I said to you, box, how many of you get irritated? I mean, box by itself is no problem. Does anybody have a problem with the word box? How many of you are going to have nightmares about the word box tonight? So, the idea of a box is nothing but a concept. There's no complications whatsoever with the show thing, box. Now, I'm going to add something to the box. I'm going to make it a box of money.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit GuyFinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit GuyFinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
Now, the minute that you make the box, which was simply a show thing, a way to communicate an idea, you have taken the simple show thing and you have turned the show thing into a something. Because when you think of a box of money, you do one of two things. I don't have one, then I'm never going to have a box of money either. Or I had one and someone took it. Or one day I'll have a box of money. Or money's nothing. Ha, I don't care. Or I need money. I want more than one box. Lots of boxes. Now, how many of you realize you fit in one of those categories? Now, how did the show thing become a something? How did the nothing, which is a thought, thoughts are no thing, other than being a natural show thing, how does it go from being a show thing to a something? But not just a simple something, is it? Because behind the something is a someone. Isn't there? There's no someone behind a box. I'll take curtain three. Do you understand? I say to the word box, there's no you that appears and goes, no, or yes, because it's just a show thing. But you say the word box of money, and suddenly someone appears. Now, who is it that appears at the moment that a no thing is made into a something? That's the question. Why is it the question? Because every last bit of pain in the human heart, in the human mind, on the planet itself, is connected to the someone that appears at the moment that the something becomes, that the nothing becomes a something. All right, I better go over this. I don't know. Are you following me? Do you understand what I'm talking about? Look. Here's someone. They walk up to you and they don't smile at you. In the moment that the person doesn't smile at you, what does thought do? Thought takes the event, It runs it through the computer of whatever it is that has that experience, and it comes up with, you know what, I've just been slighted. Someone has just done me wrong. So nothing becomes something. Someone becomes suffering. Nothing becomes someone. Someone becomes suffering. It is the movement of something that is actually, in this instance, we said a little thing into this giant, blown-up, big thing that produces over and over and over again something that is all the time unquestioned by an individual, and that is this. And I ask you to look at it with me. When you're suffering, what is it? What is it that you're suffering from? Look, don't say him, her, this or that. Be honest and look and realize that what we suffer over in the minute that we're doing it, or for the years that it goes on, has something to do with being someone who believes something belongs to him. I'm going to say it to you simply now. Mine. Mine. You want to know the root of suffering? The root of suffering comes from a moment in which something takes place, a thought appears, the thought is connected to the idea of myself relative to the event, and the next thing you know, I am in some kind of uproar over what just happened. My time. You've wasted my time. My position. You obviously don't understand it, or you wouldn't talk to me the way you do. You would show the proper respect. My body. What's wrong with my body? What's happening to it? Oh no, it's mine. A thought appears, says, you know what? You just don't look like you did before. Oh no. Did you ever see a little black bubble come up that moment? The little black bubble, here it comes, and you go, oh no, oh no. And you then start, and what do? You start to try to answer what is a nothing. The nothing becomes a something, and at the heart of this talk is what is the nature of the someone who believes the something actually exists. That's the heart of the talk. Because if the something is actually a nothing, how many of you can see the something is actually a nothing? In other words, here's this thought, it's nothing. But suddenly when it becomes mine, when it's connected to what I want, need, understand, the things I demand, then it's all of a sudden that thing that's mine starts to become not just a simple nothing, it becomes a pretty darn big something. And the larger the something becomes, guess who becomes large with it? Me. Look, if a 42-toed, 9-armed, 3-headed, 41-eared bling-blang walked in this room right now, and the person sitting next to you suddenly says, oh my God, look at the 40, the bling blang. What you would call the booby hatch, wouldn't you? You'd call, you'd say, wait a minute, there is no 42 arm, 3-legged, 92, whatever it is. That thing doesn't exist. But here's someone and they see it. Oh my God, we got to do something. We have to build a house to protect ourselves from a 42 arm. Who sees something that isn't real? Someone who isn't real himself. Period. When you see someone that's bothering you, you are looking at something made from no thing so that someone by your name can be important and special because of your relationship to that something. That's what you see. you see what that self needs in order, and listen to this if you dare, you see what that self needs to see in order to suffer. Period. Have you ever had a moment in your life where you were sure that something had happened? And then push come to shove, you realize, you know what, that something that I thought happened didn't happen. He didn't do that, she didn't, whatever it is. And there you are, and you're left someone who has egg on their face. Yes or no? Who's the someone with egg on his face? If not the momentary recognition that I was deluded. I was absolutely deceived by my own concept of that condition, so much so that I turned into a raging, raving maniac. And I want to add this. I think it's very important to put this in. Do you know that as far as I'm concerned, the only ugliness on this planet is born out of individuals when they believe that who they are is important, and that this importance that they give to themselves is always born out of that mind that turns what is a no thing into a something. Now, I said to you at the start, I said that the only way in which it's possible that we can ever understand how to say to this, you're nothing but a little thing, and actually understand it sufficiently. Would you like that power? Maybe I better ask that question. When you get afraid, would you like to be able to see that what you're afraid of has no real existence at all, apart from a part of you that wants to believe in it in order to sustain that sense of yourself? Because that's the fact. That's the fact. It's a nothing. It's a nothing. Now, there's only one way that an individual can learn to recognize a little thing for a little thing. And in order to learn how to recognize a little thing as being a little thing, or a nothing as being a nothing, the only way that's possible is for you to leave the world of little things. To leave the nature that is the lover of little things. That's the only way. And the beauty of this life is that built into it is a world that isn't little. Built into right in this room while I'm speaking to you, living inside of your own heart, there is a world in which little things, no things, never become some things and big things. And it is the understanding of that world that allows an individual to meet those moments where someone disrespects you. Someone takes something from you. Someone acts toward you in such a way that it sets you off. Or you're so frightened about what the meaning of something may be. You know, it never occurs to the mind that makes something out of nothing that it doesn't know what it tells itself it knows. And it can't occur to that mind, because that mind lives in the little world of its own content. It doesn't have anything else in it. It doesn't have anything else in it.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit guyfinley.org. That's GUYFINLEY.org.
So what's the answer? Here's the answer. Story, take a deep breath. Here's a friend, and he's been a friend with another fellow for a number of years, and they work in different businesses. His friend is involved in some kind of money-making enterprise, and man, they've been successful, and everything's fantastic. And once on a Friday night, as a rule, most of them, even though they don't work in the same companies, they all go to this rather shishy place to have their cocktails and their sushi and whatever it is that individuals go and eat when they go to shishy places. Sushi at a shishy place. Shishy place. And they're all, you know, having a great time. And if you've ever been to these places, and if you have, I feel sorry for you. They have multiple televisions and music going on. I mean, it's like it's not enough noise that human beings can't stop talking, but you've got all the rest of the noise going on too. And there it is, and their friend over there, our friend, the man in the story, and over there is his friend, and they're sitting at a table, and party, party, party. And all of a sudden, all three of the new stations that are on the different walls and the big widescreen, all of a sudden they all go to a news break. Now, talk about an instantaneous nothing into something. Man, how many of you can understand that you make a phone call into something before you recognize it's just some idiot who made a wrong call, wrong number? All of a sudden, news break, and there on the news, it's showing that something has happened to a particular commodity that these people that he is friends with, it's their business. They've made millions and millions and millions of dollars on this commodity, and all of a sudden, I don't know what it was, some new beetle appeared and it ate some country. And when it did, of course, something terrible happened to that which these people had made all their money on. And this fellow who's observing looks over because he knows what he's going to see. And sure enough, everybody at the table of his friend that all of a sudden, oh my God, oh no, oh, it's terrible. And people are throwing down drinks and they're slamming their fists and they're looking at each other and they go, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Except for his friend. And his friend is sitting there. And he's patting people on the back, and he doesn't look like he's got a problem at all. And the man knows this fellow, and he knows that something's going on. Why wouldn't he be as upset and disturbed as everybody else that seemed to have just lost everything? And he walks over, he says, hey man, what's with you? Why aren't you upset like all of your friends? This is devastating news about the partnership. And his friend looks up and he smiles, he says, yeah, I know it's true, but you see, I sold my part of the business last week. None of it's mine anymore. None of it's mine anymore. You think your thoughts are yours? You think the business that they attend to is your business? You think that the concerns of that agitated emotional state and the thoughts that it drags up with it, do you actually believe that's yours? It's not. None of it. None of it. But you see, the problem is that someone and something require each other. That nothing that becomes that something. What's going to happen? Something's there. That something produces someone that has to be concerned, that has to work and struggle and figure it out, straighten them out, has to make sure that it exerts its authority. And that someone is an absolute illusion. It is as illusory as is the something that has been made from the nothing. But the problem is that all human beings have, and I said this at the start of the talk, is this idea about what they are and what is theirs. That's why I said the big problem is you don't know the difference between what is yours and what is not yours. Let me tell you what is yours. Yours is the God-given right to be awake enough in the moment to see when something that is little, when something is nothing, wants to turn itself into something so that you can exist and serve that someone that now suffers over what they're suffering over. That's what is yours. Yours is the light that reveals the action of darkness. Yours will never be what darkness drives you to do in order to control the fear you have. And yours is the ability to recognize all of that. To see beyond the shadow of a doubt, my God, how many times am I going to be that abusive person who, it doesn't matter who's there, doesn't matter what's happening, something that is mine has been threatened. And I can't let that happen. And that nature can't see. It can't see because it is caught up in the machination of that nature that turns nothings into somethings so that someone can go through what it has to prove to itself that it actually is something real. It isn't. It isn't. But you see what's at stake here? What's at stake is that when my mind suddenly seizes on something or something, so if you get something caught in a tooth, you get a thought caught in the mind. Just the way someone says something to you. Oh, thought caught in the mind. All of a sudden, man, something starts to form. And because we're sleeping in the little dark world of thought, we can't see that thought needs it. It needs to make that nothing into something because then someone, and this is critical, man, the someone that suffers over the nothing didn't exist until that nothing became a something. There was no you suffering what that person's manifestation was. How many of you get irritated just because someone doesn't look right or speak right? You know what I'm talking. The smallest thing can set off, and all of a sudden, here's something. And now there's pressure. And by the way, that's always the case. Where there is something made out of nothing and someone appears, there's always pressure inside of that individual. And that pressure is what defines the person and makes them think they're actually important for what they're feeling. I want to add one thing to this. I want you to see the next time the following fact. I want you to see that inside of you there is an unconscious correlation between how much you suffer and how important you think you are. And see it at once so you can see the absolute stupidity of anything that would look at something, suffer over it, and then believe that that makes you important because of what you're suffering over. So here's the, if you will, and I use this word carefully, the solution. Here's the work that must be done. In the moment where you feel inwardly the first stir, the first feeling like you've got to talk, you've got to say something, you can't let that go unanswered. The first time you think to yourself, you've got to think about a new plan in order to rectify whatever it was that just dashed. The first stirring of that, I want you to see that something inside of you is making someone inside of you sick. I want you to see that something inside of you is making someone inside of you sick. What does it mean, making you sick? It means you actually see that you are starting to be carried away by this dark thing who wants you to serve its purposes so that you can be free of it. And instead of that, and this is the work part, I've given you the understanding of it, that thought divided into know things, show things, and then those know things that become some things because someone needs them that way. To take that moment in which that ball of blackness starts to form and you bring yourself into the moment. Why? Because in the moment that you're capable of seeing this staging taking place, you have brought, and listen please, you have brought into that mind, into that thought nature, a world that is greater than itself. It can't be the only thing now. See, when you're suffering, there's only that which is making you suffering and only that which you have to do to get rid of it. That's all that's in that world, and that's all the world of thought does. But when you can begin to recognize, first of all, I can see that what he said is true. I'm forever making absolute giant somethings out of what in reality are no things because something in me wants to be someone who has a problem. I can't stand just being quiet. Can't bear it if everything's okay. I got to do something, man. Now, last thought, and it connects with this. There are only two important things in life. Two important things in this life, neither one of which thought can approach. They are my soul and my God. The only two important things in the universe, your soul and God. Thought cannot approach your soul and its relationship to God, and thought can certainly not approach God. You can think some things about God, but that turns you into someone who will fight with others who have different things. So you can be important in your understanding that way, whereas real understanding has no fight in it at all, because it is continually giving itself to this understanding that it's possible anytime a person wants to wake up and choose to do it, to bring themselves back into this moment, into this presence. It's what I call the present moment, this presence. And you bring yourself back in, and instead of being someone trying to deal with something, you become that which sees that there is nothing there that needs to be dealt with the way that you have been led to believe prior to that moment of awareness. If you work like this, you'll bring yourself into a different scale. You'll bring yourself into a different world in which the powers of those things that punish you no longer have the power to punish you, because you at last know what it means when you say you're nothing but a little thing. Work at it.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at guyfinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit guyfinley.com. That's guyfinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.